It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Apple replaces free with get on the download buttons on the App Store, declares victory in the patent wars, and reaches $700 billion in market cap. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 430, recorded November 25th, 2014. Getting shingy with it. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by SmartThings. SmartThings lets you control and monitor your home anywhere in the world using your smartphone. To get started, visit smartthings.com/twit and you'll save 10% off any home security or solution kit when you use a code TWIT10 at checkout. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/MacBreak. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code MacBreak when you check out. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news with our good buddies, Andy Iannotko to my left from the Chicago Sun-Times. And
hello,
he's accompanied by his cosplay team.
There you go. I'm having a reality show of who gets to be my office assistant for the next three quarters. And this is the cosplay episode in which you had to go. They had a hunting list of, they had to get at least eight people, including two celebrities, who take their picture and post and tweet with the hashtag Andy Iannotko's intern search, and depends on their Q score. But they're a fun group of kids. I enjoyed having them work out for about 3 months before I fired them all because I didn't need them.
I wish we could do that. That would be so fun. I wanted all of our interns to wear red Star Trek shirts, and Lisa wouldn't go for that. I thought, oh, that's great because they're the red guy, but she wouldn't go for it.
You really kind of have them by the throat now because college education is so expensive that if you withhold the college credit they're promised to get for the internship, that's like $9,000 down the hole.
And that's why we pay them $25 a week. Renee Ritchie is also here from iMore.com. Hi, Renee.
Hey, Leo. I can't help but notice that they put the red shirt on you today, though.
They did. I am a red shirt today. Look at that. Why is it? Where's that coming from? Is that me?
No, That's okay. All my devices are ringing right now.
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
This is our backup solution in case the connection goes away.
So that's like
apparently
Google Hangout.
It's not a good backup solution.
No, it happens in my house, and it's really horrible. Man. It happened yesterday. I was booking our vacation for next year. So I'm talking to the travel agent. She says, well, it's going to take a while, so I'm going to call you back. And so there were several callbacks, and each time, because she was using my Google Voice number, my computer rings. I have finally five or six phones, tablets. They're all ringing. But the problem is they all ring with different tones. Yeah. I think this one has this Three Stooges thing.
Can that trigger your continuity too?
Yes.
That triggers continuity.
Oh, everything is going off. And but I pick up one, but it doesn't matter because it takes a while for the rest to figure out.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So every time she calls me back, basically she hears this crazy cacophony of sounds and different ringtones and noises. She must have thought I worked at a symphony or something.
I was just talking to a friend of mine about the differences between iMessage and AOL chat and the other chat things, and telling him that I have to readjust my genteel behavior, because I'm used to the idea of trying to figure out, I want to call somebody. Ooh, I don't want to interrupt them in case they're doing something important. But now that the responsibility for someone not wanting to talk to Andy Iannotko is now on that person's shoulders. Because if I use iMessage, their phone is going to ring, their tablet's going to ring, their computer's going to ring. It's their responsibility to set up blocks to make sure that they don't have to talk to me unless they don't want to. Whereas, remember the good old days when you just see there's a green jewel, there's a yellow jewel, or there's a red jewel to say, I'm probably not in a good mood to talk right now, or a green flag that says, absolutely, talk to me about what disappointed you about last night's Simpsons.
We're open for your calls.
The thing with continuity that can be frustrating is that it basically uses Apple's push notification server to alert you, the other devices, to the call. So it essentially sends an iMessage to your iPad and your Mac, and then when it discovers they're on the same Wi-Fi network, it does something very similar to FaceTime and sends the audio call over. But if once you hang up, it's got to send another message telling them you picked up on the other device. And depending on the latency of that message, it can keep ringing for seconds and seconds and seconds.
It's a universal problem. Skype does this also. And I think there's no good fix for it. But, wow. Zero latency messaging. That's what we all need. So I am in a red jewel today because, the holidays are upon us. We have a late Thanksgiving in the U.S. this year, which means that everywhere else is celebrating Christmas already. Traditionally, we wait till the day after Thanksgiving, right? I haven't got the tree or anything. But because it's so late this year, we're kind of behind. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to break out the red sweater. I only get to wear it 1 month a year. And now is the time. It also means I'll be the first to go when we run down to the planet.
I thought it was product red, Leo. I was assured that you were, if I subscribe to Leo right now, it's a product red, Leo.
The product red is an interesting, we were talking about this before the show. If you go to the Mac App Store, it is normal. You know, there's not a lot of red. In fact, the Evernote green kind of dominates my page because it's a featured product. But if you go to the iTunes, holy cow. Everything is red. All of the apps now are doing red. And, of course, this is Product Red, Bono's meta charity that raises money for AIDS research. And the goal is to have an AIDS-free globe in the next few years. It's a good cause. But what I must be Apple. Does anybody know, did Apple do this? Because even Farmville is going red.
I can't give all the details because they're internal. But my understanding is this was a rank and file initiative. Someone inside Apple, not management, thought of this idea and then walked it up the chain and Apple approved it. Yeah, it really is the kind of company Apple is, where someone can have an idea like this and then it can just spread. And they got these 25 developers agree to it because these apps had the kind of in-app purchase or purchase setup that made these sorts of deals possible. Right. So when you buy, for example, GarageBand, you buy a set of loops, that money goes to charity. And then Apple decided to pitch in as well. So on Black Friday, if you buy something, you'll be given a gift card and a portion of that gift card will go to Product Red. And then Cyber Monday on the online and retail stores, if you buy something, a percentage of the profit Apple makes from those transactions will also go to Product Red. So the developers are pitching in and Apple's pitching
in. Normally, if I purchase something on the Apple store, 30% goes to Apple. But they say in every case here, 100% is going to Product Red. So that means Apple's giving their 30% up as well?
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. So here's an example. Wonderful game, Monument Valley. And they have a whole separate level pack that you can buy that will only be available through December 7th. And by the way, I downloaded it. It's really hard, which is great. So that, and the same thing with Angry Birds. They have, you know, special levels that are in-app purchases. And in this case, it's 99 cents for Ida's Red Dream. It's not a lot of money, but that's nice because it goes straight, 100% goes straight to Product Red.
And it's indies too. Like Real Mac is doing it with the Clear To-Do app. You can purchase a Clear To-Do app, and part of that will go to Product Red. So it's a good mix. I mean, Kim Kardashian is in there, and Threes. It's an incredible range of different apps, and Apple's own GarageBand is in there.
That's neat. So with Clear, you'll get a special red theme, which you probably won't want to use because everything looks the same. But still, you'll feel good. You'll feel good. And Apple's supported Product Red for years. I mean, I remember buying a red iPod. That was the U2 iPod. Yep. I remember... We bought red smart covers for the new iPads. Both Lisa and Sarah bought red covers. The proceeds went to Product Red. So, that's good. That's nice. Clash of Clans, the warrior has red hair and a red mustache. Wow.
They updated their icons. They updated their art. It was a significant effort. It all happened Sunday night, which is pretty impressive because Apple is on vacation this whole week.
So they had to get it. And as I understand, everything goes through December 7th or 8th. So if you want to take advantage of these, there's a pile of red gems that you can buy to benefit Product Red. And you can then use it to decorate your town hall for the holidays. It's perfect. Everybody wins.
And the best thing is it underscores that consumers should be addicted to in-app purchases. Don't even think about it.
Just do it. It's good. Actually, I don't want to be a Grinch.
Do it.
I just want to make sure because
you're dressed like Bob Knight, you know, the coach used to throw chairs as basketball
players.
Yeah,
Bobby Knight. Yeah.
So if you want to do like cosplay and be in character like that, you could.
I went to Charity Navigator to see, before I give to a charity, I always go to Charity Navigator and I see if it's a 4-star charity. They will investigate the charity as to how much of the money goes to the causes, how much it goes to administration and all of that stuff. And I like to pick charities where the majority, you know, the 4-star is what I look for. But unfortunately, I don't see Product Red in here. So I don't know what that means. But that's, I always like to do that. I guess Red is not a charity in itself. And they don't, it's not in here. So they don't, but they don't really, if you go to red.org, which is the Product Red website, they don't really say exactly which charities the money goes to is for. I mean, maybe I can find it. I don't want to put a rain on anybody's parade by any means. Cause I mean, the cause is good. I just want to make sure that it's, I get nervous when I see all these corporations buying into it. Right.
Well, that's the advantage of with Bono. It makes it a trendy or an easy thing for them to do.
Created by Bono and Bobby Shriver in 2006. They've raised immense amounts of money, which is literally billions of dollars. Here's the annual report. So you can go read the annual report and see.
One of the things I like is if you go to apple.com/red, it tells you all about this. If you go to apple.com/watch, it tells you all about their URLs are just so easy to
use. Let me tell you, having been through these web design scrums, this is non-trivial to do this.
Yeah.
This Friday, buy select Apple products, get the gift. So that's nice. You know what? I think that's what Black Friday should be. Let's make it Red Friday. Because then it's not about, what can I get for a buck? And Apple's never had great Black Friday deals. It's let's
the
support.
Black is supposed to be in the black. So if you change that to in the red, the retailers will all.
They're not going
to
be happy. Yeah. See, I'd like to know a little bit more. And goodness knows, but everywhere I go to read, including the Apple page, it says it goes to the Global Fund to help fund AIDS programs in Africa. They've raised $75 million from Apple alone. It says $275 million for the Global Fund, so I was wrong about that. But I don't see, like, you know, anyway. I don't want to be a Grinch. And gosh knows, I have plenty of Product Red products. I always buy it when I can. Anyway, nice job, Apple. Mm-hmm. Nice job.
It is definitely something that fits their role as a retailer as opposed to a tech company. It's like there's a relationship you have with your customers that goes beyond here. We've made this new shiny thing. Go buy it. And it comes to no, you're part of the community of JCPenney shoppers. And you're part of the fact that you shop at Whole Foods says something about you. And we're making this special thing that we're doing that as a community, we know that you will love to do. And I think that that's something that's very, still very, very Apple.
Here's something. This is from the FAQ. Red takes no money. Sale money, 100% of the money from the sale of Red products goes directly to the ground in Africa in the form of Global Fund grants. So I guess they're a variety of grants, and they do give 100%. So I think I'll give them 4 stars. The Leo Charity Navigator gives them 4 stars.
Or Leo's.
And by the way, it's not tax deductible. Since Red products are purchased through our corporate partners, Red products are not tax deductible. You don't get the tax deduction. Apple.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't hurt.
Those poor, poor people in Ireland not getting their fair due in taxes. That's just breaks my heart.
It looks like each country determines the exact needs of their country and how the money will be used. Programs are reviewed and measured for success. So it's complicated.
First that Bono puts his music on my phone. Now he puts his red icons on my phone. Leave my phone.
Has anybody complained?
Maybe this is just them softening us up for like the red Beats icon.
Product Red Beats.
Yeah. Moving on, ladies and gentlemen. Apple's rockstar-backed patent war, we have peace in our times, seems to be coming to an end.
Yeah. I mean, or another way of looking at it is that, you know that machine gun that just like kicks the hell out of your shoulder when you use it? They've decided to stop using that now.
Rockstar was a company formed to hold the patents that Apple and others bought from Nortel. Microsoft, BlackBerry, Ericsson, Sony, and Apple paid $4.5 billion, but Apple's the biggest of the five because they put $2.6 billion into the Nortel patents. They then formed a company called Rockstar, which is what is euphemistically called a non-practicing entity, mm-hmm. or an NPE. Others might call it a patent troll. Others might say merely it's a patent defense organization to make sure that the people who invented the products get paid appropriately, or who own the patents bought the patents from the people who invented the products. Rockstar had sued many companies, including HTC, Huawei, Samsung, that make Android devices. It seems like Apple has lost its desire, its will to participate in this. In fact,
there was an article this morning. I forget. There was one of the analysts wrote an article this morning that said that, you know, given the lagging sales, especially like, I think the Galaxy S5 numbers were much lower than expected.
Yeah.
That Apple doesn't see them as the threat that they once saw them as.
Apple might be declaring victory, mission accomplished, perhaps.
I don't know. I mean, I always have seen a parallel between Steve Jobs coming back to Apple and saying, you know what, this fighting with Microsoft, it's not doing us any good whatsoever. Right. Let's just get rid of this. And I'd have no inside information about this, but it just seems like there's not the same sort of just sort of DNA level bile about Google inside Apple that there once was. Now that Tim Cook is large and in charge. And I agree that if it were a really productive thing for Apple to keep doing, they keep on doing it. But I think that right now they're realizing that, okay, things have simmered down a little bit. Let's just stop wasting time, effort, and money on things that really don't matter anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a factor that 2 years ago, Android had yet to really distinguish itself the way that they have in 2014. And maybe Apple was internally thinking, well, look, they are just simply copying us step by step by step by step. They're always every version of Android will be a clone of the iPhone. And now that it looks like, no, there is real diversity of hardware. No, these two platforms are almost completely distinct, or as distinct as two different touchscreen 4.9-inch, 4.7-inch phones can possibly be. Maybe it's like, okay, that might have been a big worry in 2011, but it's no longer a worry in 2014, 2015. Yeah.
It wasn't just Google, though. Apple was Rockstar was also going after
Microsoft.
Cisco. Microsoft was part of Rockstar, but so they were going after other people besides Android. Cisco, in an investor call in last year, apparently spoke somewhat cryptically about a resolution that is, quote, constructive for the whole industry. It's also possible that I'm reading from IAM magazine. IAM magazine, which is from the IP Media Group, and is the kind of the definitive source for this. A lot of people have written about it, but they all refer back to this. Rockstar's settlement with Google could mark the beginning of the end of the Nortel NPE, non-practicing entity. So they reached an agreement on November 12th with Cisco and Google. They may sell
these
it.
Are these the ones where Google famously bid pie? When they were in the bidding war with Apple?
No. Was it? Yeah, maybe it was.
I think it might have been.
Yeah, you're right, it was.
No, I think it was the constant E. 2.1. No, I think that's actually
true. Yeah, Pi was the Spectrum auction. Yeah, and I think the Nortel patents, they didn't really successfully bid against Apple and Microsoft. So that's good. In fact, so there's two stories in a row that you could rightfully say, although nobody will, oh, Steve Jobs would never have allowed that to happen. One, Jobs was famously against charitable giving, right?
And he wanted it personal. He was afraid. Or, he didn't like it in terms of Apple. He wanted them to do it personally.
He wanted a corporate thing. Yeah. And he was, of course, the guy who declared thermonuclear war against Google and Android. He was very mad about it. And I think in both cases, this is a kinder, gentler Apple.
Yeah. And but to be fair, he might have talked him, other people might have talked him down from there over the past 3 years if he had survived, or even he himself would have said, "Yeah, okay, we're done. Let's find a way that we can basically say that we did what we set out to do and then go home."
I think you have to eventually, and I guarantee you, Steve would have come to the same conclusion. See that the cost of this patent war is higher than the benefit. Yeah. And that's, I think, pretty obviously what happened. And Samsung's down 30% this year. The S5 has been a flop. You know, maybe they did win. Maybe they can declare victory.
Although it's sort of a flop the way that the iPhone 5C was a flop, right? That any other manufacturer would still love to have that.
What did they say? 12 million units of the Galaxy S5, something like that?
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot less than the S4, and it's a lot less than the iPhone 6. So, you know. Let's take a break. Andy Anakos here, Renee Ritchie, Leo Laporte. We're talking about Apple and Macintosh. And, you know, something that we keep waiting for Apple is some home automation solutions. Apple Home, Google's doing it. But really, the solution has to come, I think, from a third party that unites them all. Because the problem is you've got this Tower of Babel where you have a variety of different devices all with different protocols. That's why SmartThings did their Kickstarter project a couple of years ago, raised a lot of money, and created this, the SmartThings Hub. This hub talks to everything. Your Nest thermostat, your drop cam, it'll talk to your Schlage locks. In fact, if you go to smartthings.com, you could take a look and you'll see all the different devices. And then what's nice is you control the hub and then hence all those devices from your iOS device, from Android, even from Windows Phone. That's how committed they are to cross-platform. SmartThings just announced that next year you'll also be able to control and automate a variety of Samsung appliances, including refrigerators, washers, dryers, air conditioners, and even a robotic vacuum. So what you do is you put this SmartThings presence sensor on your in-laws, and then when they come in the house, the robot vacuum starts cleaning up. And that won't work. It'll be too late by then. There's so many things you can do. In fact, SmartThings starts you off with these solution kits or the home security kits that give you the hub plus the extra SmartThings sensors to get things done. Control and automate your lights and small appliances from wherever you are. You could start dinner from your office. Get instant alerts to prevent a small leak from creating a major flood. Stay connected to your family by getting notifications when people come and go. You actually could put these little sensors, presence sensors, in your kids' backpacks, and you'll know when they come in the house and when they leave the house. You can get notifications if someone you don't know tries to enter the house. Protect valuable items, secure areas that are off limits. With the SmartThings app, you can easily see what's happening in every room and with all your connected devices. It's like having the home in the palm of your hand. So what they've done is they've got these great kits, the solution kits that you can pick a thing that you want to do and the solution kit makes it happen. But of course, it's completely extensible because now you have the hub, you can get more units. You can get other people's units, and it'll all work together. They also have the home security kit because a lot of people want to do home security. So those are the two choices there. Now, I can get you 10% off any of those kits by going to smartthings.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT10 when you check out, 10% off, plus free shipping within the U.S. smartthings.com/twit, the offer code TWIT10. This is probably the easiest way to automate your home, and it's got great, you know, expansion capabilities. You get started, you do one little thing. That's why they're so smart with these solution kits. You do one little thing, now you can easily add more. And really, it takes just a couple of minutes. I was able to get this all set up, and really, almost instantly. So cool. SmartThings.com/twit. Apple stock continues to surge, and Apple has now crossed the $700 billion market cap. Holy moly.
So glad they listened to all those investors who said they should fire Tim Cook. Sorry, analysts, yeah.
Yeah, and listen to me when I said short Apple last year. Boy, was I wrong. But see, if you listen to me for stock advice, you're making a big mistake. Previous record, $658 billion in September 2012. Apple is now more valuable than ever before. Remember, they did a 7-to-1 stock split. So a lot of times we talk about the stock as if it hadn't split. It already hit $800 a share. Oh my God. It's now up to $840 a share, more than $120 for the current share. That's just incredible. To put it in perspective, Microsoft's market cap, and by the way, Microsoft's number two, is $394 billion. $702 billion, $394 billion for Microsoft. You know, the days when Bill Gates appeared on looming over Steve Jobs on stage, I will save Apple. Here's $100 million. Instead,
you talk about your haunted empire, right?
Oh, yeah, really. That does put haunted empire in perspective, doesn't it? That's just amazing. Yeah,
that was always just cheap theatrics. That stock buy was never that big to begin with. It was more like an act of faith for people who needed reassurance that Apple was not going to be going away in the next 90 days.
I'm not convinced of that. I mean, didn't they say that it had 90 days of runway and that Gil Amelio had practically bankrupted the company? This was right when Steve just came back. Wasn't this money kind of instrumental? People have said it saved Apple. You don't think so?
I don't think it was the money so much as there was this hammer, I think, that was over Apple's head, basically saying that Microsoft could kill Apple if Microsoft made it not work with Microsoft Office and made it not work with the operating system and the software that powers all American business.
Yeah.
And so this was at least the money I'm sure was a positive thing, but I think mostly it was the assurance that there is another company that has faith that Apple is going to, you know, be a successful enterprise at some point in its future. I think this is where I have to back off and say that I know that this is what I have been told by people who understand finance, of which I am not one of those people, and I don't pretend to be a business analyst, but I have been told by other people that the money was nice, but it was mostly they feel as though that was of the entire package, that was not the most important part of that announcement.
Let's put this in perspective. If you had bought Apple when it went public in late 1980, in current terms, the stock was around 50 cents a share in 1980. And, you know, as you go through the 80s and the 90s, a buck, you know, that's doubling. $4 in August 2000. You head up to October 2007. You got a $26 a share, and a little dip there, then another jump here. This is 2012, its last peak. Here we are. If you look at the graph, and those of you watching video, it's currently $118 a share. If you'd bought that share when they first went public at 50 cents.
I'm crying right now, Leo. Just crying.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, but ideally, when you set up that scenario, that's I buy 1,000 shares of Apple stock. Then, like, as soon as that transaction is complete, I go outside to get a paper. I'm hit by a bus, and I'm in a coma for 20 years.
Yeah.
And my power of attorney denies my people the ability to make any transactions.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anybody who would have said all those dips and all those little fluctuations that would have held on to all those shares all that time.
No. But if you'd spent $500 for 1,000 shares in 1980, it would be worth $118,000 now. So there. And by the way, that's adjusted for the split. So we're pretending it didn't split. Actually, we're pretending it. Well, I don't know what we're pretending. We're just pretending.
It's a lot of money.
We're pretending we had this stock. That's what we're pretending. And what would we have done with it?
You can use gravity to go back.
Nobody ever fantasizes about buying a losing lottery ticket.
Yeah, right.
It's always, you know what? Yeah. But the kid needed braces, and I was told that we got to spend this $5,000 on orthodontia.
You got to say, though, if you look at this is the graph for the whole life of Apple. And the big jump is 2007, of course, when the iPhone comes out. And this most recent jump is probably due to the great success of the iPhone in the last quarter. And I think built into this is some excitement about Apple Watch, right?
And the buyback. I mean, it's everything that Tim Cook is doing landing at once.
Yeah. Boy, that haunted empire. I'll tell you, the ghost of Steve Jobs way down here in the valley is really haunting this Mount Everest over here.
The value of the short-term opinion.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Amazing. Also, I mean, I think every time we talk about financials and stuff like that, we always talk about, oh, isn't it adorable how the analysts talk about what Apple should and shouldn't be? Oh, isn't that outraged shareholder? Oh goodness, let's bake some cookies for them the next time, so that every time you you raise your little fist in the air, it's like when a rabbit can't get into the little plastic bag that has the little tiny carrots in it. It's just adorable to watch. It's like almost anybody who is seeing the numbers, seeing that it's a binary state. You look at how well Apple is doing and you say, whatever they're doing, maybe they should keep doing things generally on that shape.
And we should point out that, in fact, it's not merely the stock market. I mean, that's merely the stock market's opinion. And there are other, ways you can look at a company and its success. That's just what the stock market says about it.
And again, analysts' job is not to inform us. It's to get their clients to make money. And they'll tell you it's doomed so that people sell and their clients can buy more.
Oh, yeah. That would be wrong. You think?
Well, also wasn't it? Well,
I've seen the YouTube videos.
What was the Martin Scorsese movie with Leonardo DiCaprio as the corrupt investment broker?
Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah. It had that one line that kind of chilled me because it was so simple and so true. It's that scene in which Leonardo is getting started in this business. Matthew McConaughey, as the seasoned expert, is explaining what their business is. And he said, I will not do my Matthew McConaughey impression because I do not have one. And also, I've never done dope, but it just puts that little oily thing in the bottom of your
it
throat.
Does. There's something magical that happens there, yeah.
But he says that, our client makes money, and what they want to do is they want to cash out and they want to keep that money so that they can maybe retire someday or maybe buy a home. We don't make money unless they keep making transactions. So we have to talk them into letting us put their money someplace else so that we collect a commission. Then let them put it someplace else that makes the transition. So it's like, you know what? Now that I heard that, perhaps I'm going to be looking at this industry with a little extra skepticism that I had skepticism before, but maybe I'm going to be a little bit more skeptical.
There's that amazing Jim Cramer video where he's like, all you do is you float a rumor about the iPhone being delayed and then everybody panics and you make money on it and you just can't believe he's telling you all this stuff. Then you watch it and you realize what all their advice is.
Exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a reason to depress the stock price. Apple $450 million ebook settlement gets final court approval. So there you have it. This is the case where all the publishers and all the companies involved had settled except Apple. Publishers, the Department of Justice was upset at Apple, saying that Apple's ebook pricing was unfair
to Amazon.
To Amazon, right. Yeah, this one you can really fight over. We have talked a lot about it. Judge Denise Cote, who was the judge of record in this and many other Apple cases, approved what she called a highly unusual agreement. Apple will pay $400 million directly to consumers. Could be as many as 23 million consumers. So you're going to get $4 if the company is unsuccessful in appealing a ruling. So the five publishers will be splitting $166 million. No, I'm sorry. The publishers are going to provide $166 million for ebook purchasers, and Apple will pour $400 million into that as well.
Hatchet authors will still get nothing.
Authors get nothing because all you did was write the book.
Where's the monument to the real heroes of publishing, the content aggregator? That's what I asked.
The deal still allows Apple to appeal. But this settlement was on the eve of trial, so this is good news. The trial is off now, although Apple could appeal. I don't understand it. I'm not a lawyer. So
on Twitter, Counter Notions, one of the famous Apple analysts who doesn't use his real name, was doing a whole bunch of lists of things that Judge Denise Cote could go after Apple for now that the e-books thing is settled.
If the appeals court overturns the settlement and returns the case to Judge Cote, Apple only owes $50 million to consumers and $20 million to lawyers. Oh, my God. That's who makes out on these things.
Well, again, as a consumer, am I better off today than I was before this lawsuit? And I'm hard-pressed to say I am. I mean, maybe I am, but I haven't noticed any big difference. There's just a single vendor, Amazon, who can sell books for whatever they want.
Right.
And that doesn't seem in my best interest.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
Is that really true?
What?
There are multiple vendors.
Well, I mean, not of any significance compared to Amazon.
What is Amazon's market share? Is it like more than 50%?
I do not know, but I know it's.
And this is only ebooks, right?
Yeah, yes. I mean it's similar to Android versus iOS, similar to Microsoft versus every other operating system. It's dominant, but there's still room for play elsewhere.
I have the numbers as of February.
Oh, you see the damage they can do by pulling someone like Hachette off their shelves.
And Hachette did settle. The proportion of all ebooks sold by Amazon. Well, ebooks now make up 30% of all book sales. So 70% are still books, but ebooks are 30%. And of those 30%, Amazon has 65% market share. Apple and Barnes and Noble account for the rest. So it's not completely dominant. Amazon's current revenue from books, well, see, they haven't broken out ebooks, but from books is $5.25 billion. And these are some good numbers. This all comes from a New Yorker article early this year. 53% is the effective discount Amazon receives from Random House.
Although I think the argument was their ability to sell at a loss, to sell as a loss leader, because they're supported by other businesses, when that makes it hard for companies that don't, like Apple can compete with that because they also have other business lines, but it makes it hard for companies just trying to sell books to compete with them. And it also, in the author's views, or the publisher's views, devalues books so that once the price goes low, people won't let it go back.
Here's a good number that means nothing, but Penny Marshall, remember, she wrote a memoir called My Mother Was Nuts that nobody bought, sold 17,000 copies. However, Amazon, which published it, had paid her $800,000 in advance. So effectively, she got $47 a copy for her book. And since it was Amazon only, and one of the reasons she only sold 17,000 is only Amazon could sell it. Anyway. Nope. Yeah, I have a feeling Amazon is more detrimental to the overall. However, I continue to buy books through Amazon because it sure is convenient. Do you buy? I like my Kindle. Either of you buy books from Apple's store?
I do. I buy both because being in Canada is weird because sometimes I'll go to Amazon and I'll say, I want to buy that Wolverine trade paperback, and it'll say, not available in Canada. Then I'll go to iBooks and be able to buy it. Or I'll go to iBooks and say, I want to gift this to Andy, and it'll say, sorry, you can only gift in Canada. Then I go to Kindle, and I can gift internationally with Kindle. So you have to jump around a lot.
Is it reasonable? I mean, we've seen Apple take over music sales. You know, the vast majority of all music sold is sold through iTunes. Is it reasonable to think that the same kind of thing will happen to books, that people will stop buying physical books? It's only 30% Kindle and other ebooks now. Is it conceivable that we'll just see the end of paper books and everybody buy ebooks, and then will it be dominated by one company or the other, or will it be split by the two companies? I feel like Amazon's going to own that market.
Well, I think chiefly because they're doing something that Apple isn't doing, which is saying we do not require you to own one of our pieces of hardware to be able to read this book. That's why I never buy books off of iBooks. I do. The typography is better. The app is prettier, but I don't like the fact that switching to Android would have been a hugely complicated and unattractive proposition. All my music is locked to iTunes. All my books are locked to iBooks. All my movies are locked to iTunes. Right now, really, the only thing that's music has escaped the corral, but we're still in a world where you can spend $1,000 on books on iBooks, and you have to own an Apple device in order to read that stuff. And I don't think that's a good idea for reading a library. I think ideally you would like to be able to buy all these things DRM free, and I don't think that we should allow ourselves to be lulled into a sense of complacency that buying books without DRM is never a viable proposition for the publishers to offer. But that said, I do like the fact that I recommend Kindle over almost everything else, chiefly because they are willing to put a reader on anything with a pulse.
But it's still DRM'd, isn't it?
It's still DRM'd, but it's available on anything. And even Google Play, they will support devices that are within their best interest to support. but they still have their vendetta against, right. or excuse me, they still have their prejudice or whatever it is against the Windows phone.
Yeah.
So, you won't be able to get a native Google Play Books reader for that device.
Can you
so
strip that's why, off the DRM from Amazon's What is it? What is the Amazon format? EPUB?
There no, are the ways Mobi. To, there are ways to do that. They're not quite legal, but there are ways to do that. But I mean, I think they really embrace something that for their own best interest, they embrace something that that Steve Jobs was talking about with iTunes, that we want to make it so easy to buy stuff from our store that you would not want to buy stuff from anybody else's store. And Amazon, I have tried these DDRM apps for Kindle. I've never felt much of a motivation to use them because, well, is it going to be easier than just simply downloading the Kindle app for my iPad, then the Kindle app for my Android tablet, then for this whatever thing? No, it's not going to be. So, okay. I've academically proved it works, and now I don't have to use it again.
I'm with Andy that I tend to use the Amazon stuff too, but I also don't ever want to, you know, intellectually, internally make the mistake that, you know, Apple is very easy to see. Vertical lock-ins are really easy to see. Horizontal lock-ins, well, you know, it's the kind that Amazon has where, yes, I can get it for every device as long as they keep supporting that device, but I have no, there's nothing to say they won't stop one day in the future, and I can't just take that book, and if I decide I like iBooks better, load it into iBooks or into whatever reader I want, it's still locked into Amazon's layer. So while they right now support all the devices I want, I would still really, really, really like that DRM-free option because music is the only thing we can get right now that really I can put it up on Amazon's locker. I can put it up in iTunes Match. I can put it anywhere I want, and that's the only way to get rid of the lock completely.
Yeah. The problem is that this is not going to go away until we as consumers start demanding it. Comixology over the summer started adding DRM-free comics as an option. As a matter of fact, they retroactively applied it to whatever books you've already purchased, providing that the publisher has already okayed DRM-free downloads on that title. So until consumers start saying, no, this is BS, I don't want to have this locked into Comixology platform, I don't want this locked into the Kindle platform, and they start taking their business elsewhere, or until piracy becomes so well organized that it is just as easy to grab a non-DRM'd version of this illegally than it is to simply spend $9 or $12 on Amazon to buy it on a Kindle, then that's going to be the state of affairs forever.
Yeah. I'm looking at Calibre, which is one way to do this. It's an open source free ebook converter, which will convert. By the way, there's an Amazon Prime ad at the top of it, which Amazon would not be happy to know. So it looks like it'll just read the files right off your Kindle and convert them to some other format. So it's not the strongest DRM.
I don't think that breaks DRM, though.
It doesn't break DRM.
The last time I looked at it, it didn't. What it does is if you have, let's say that you've done like a send to Kindle from your web browser, it will transmogrify those Kindle files to something else. But I could be wrong. That was the last time I really looked at Calibre, and that was a year and a half, 2 years
ago. I'm not advocating it.
I'd be shocked if anybody based in the United States published a app that breaks the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and just said, hey,
here we go.
Go ahead and use it. Enjoy it, everybody.
Hey, kids.
I spent the weekend ripping Blu-rays that I bought off of my comic book shop off the secondhand thing. And it works great, but it has to be real. Setting it up has to be really complicated because they have to make sure that the stuff that runs afoul of the feds has to be located by a company and a server that is not in the United States of America. Yeah. So once you snap these it's like Scaramanda's gun from the Man with the Golden Gun. It's like, hey, everybody, here's my gold fountain pen, and here's my cigarette case, and here's my lighter, and here's my cufflink. And if you want to snap them together and make a working gun, I suppose you could do that, but we're really just selling you a pen and a cigarette case and instructions for how to snap them together into a working gun. Hey, our hands are clean.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, some interesting results on color accuracy on the iPhone versus other phones. But first, a word from our friends at Personal Capital. Love Personal Capital. It is, in fact, it was the founder, Ed Harris, who first told me about Personal Capital when he was on our show, Triangulation. He's a former CEO of PayPal and Intuit. We were talking about finance and money. And he said, I've got this thing we're going to do called Personal Capital. I signed up for it then, and I've been a member for 2 years now, and I love it. It's free. It's secure. It's easy to set up. And it solves two problems that people have with keeping track of their investments. The first, of course, is that everything's on different accounts. Your bank account, different website, new password. Your stocks, your 401k. I have 401ks from three previous employers, all on different sites with different passwords. Your loans, your mortgages, it's all in spread out all over the place. With personal capital, it coalesces all this stuff into a single page. So you can see exactly how you're doing very quickly on your desktop, on your phone, on your laptop, on your tablet, anywhere. And then, of course, there's the issue of how are you managing your money? Are you doing it yourself? Could be a bad idea if you're using a manager. Are you paying that person too much, or the broker, the online broker, too much? Personal Capital makes it very simple to see where your stuff is, to see how it's doing, to manage it, and to find out if you're overpaying for the advice. You could even get tailored advice from Personal Capital on optimizing your investments. So stop overpaying in fees. Try Personal Capital. It's free. PersonalCapital.com/MacBreak. They even have an award-winning app for Android Wear. You can put on your watch. It's in the Google Play Store. Pretty awesome. PersonalCapital.com/MacBreak. Set it up today. It's the smart way and the free way to grow your money, whether you're planning to buy a house, putting away money for a rainy day, or investing for your retirement. You need to pay attention to it. You can't ignore it. The more you know, the better you'll be. PersonalCapital.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Do you guys trust DisplayMate, the folks who do these?
Not as much as a Nantech, but more than me.
Not as much as a Nantech, but more than you. So what a Nantech says is probably is the definitive source. Although with a Nand gone and Brian Krug gone, two of their best people, I don't know whether to trust a Nantech still or not.
Yeah, Ryan is awesome. The new editor-in-chief is really good.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, that if you say that, because you're a competitor, so if you say that, it must be true.
I don't view them as competitors. I mean, they do completely different stuff from almost every other.
Like, they're so good.
Yeah, I agree. I think Renee and I are probably on the same page where we love DX. I love DxO Labs. I love Anand because I don't understand at a deep level how CPUs are architected and how the technology is about creating CPUs. So I think it's very, very valuable to say, and let's see, what about the A8 chip? Let's see what Anand has to say about that.
Yeah, no, I do exactly the same thing.
And of course, I'm always careful when I write about it and say, oh, here's what Anand Tech has to say. Here's what DxO says about this image sensor. So there's competition, but then there's, oh, thank goodness for this resource that they provide.
Yeah. I don't think either Andy or I have 20 grand worth of optical test equipment.
not to say the post-grad engineering degrees that are, that are required. Yeah.
DisplayMate makes software that people use to calibrate monitors, to test monitors. And their president, Raymond Sonara, will publish articles about color accuracy on displays all the time. And I feel like these guys are paying attention. Like, DxO, Mark, sells software. So, DxO and DisplayMate, maybe they're not completely independent journalists like Anantech. But as you say, who has the equipment to do this anyway?
Yeah.
I feel like these are, these charts are self-explanatory. They talk about display color accuracy. That is an issue of how accurate, a blue, is the blue blue? Is the red red? Then there's gamut, which is the range of colors that can be displayed. And of course, no display can do everything the eye can see. People say, oh, it's got 4 billion colors. That's more than you can see. But what's the gamut? And that's what matters, is the range of colors. And then things like how well it does skin tones and things like that. So they do these shootouts. And so they done recently a shootout from the iPhone 6 Plus, the Galaxy Note 4, the Air 2, and the Surface Pro 3. And it's probably worth reading the whole thing and looking at all these tables, although it's hard to take a simple takeaway from this. But I will boil it down, I guess, to the best display color. Right now, most accurate in absolute color accuracy is not the iPhone, but the Galaxy Note 4. And the second place is the Microsoft Surface Pro 3, closely tied with the Galaxy Tab S 10.5. The iPhone fairly far, and iPad Air fairly far down in terms of accuracy, skin tone accuracy, organic color accuracy, blue region color accuracy. You know, it does better with skin tone. It does better with organic color. Does terrible with blue. White point accuracy, very poor. So you disagree with these or?
Agree and disagree. I mean, it's I react the same way as when I react to DxO's score of the iPhone 6 Plus as the best camera sensor in any phone out there. It's good. The graphs are if the math or their findings are incorrect, there are other nerds out there with the same engineering degrees who will prove them wrong. It's just that what I don't like is when people take this information and try to extrapolate out of it by saying that, oh, well, that means that the Samsung Galaxy S4 is going to look so much better than the pictures that you're going to look at on your iPhone 6. Like, well, no, that's not necessarily true, because all you're looking at are graphs and where those points fall among those graphs. Especially when it comes down to something as subjective as how good is this photo that this camera has taken and how good does this image or this video look on this display? Because if someone tells you that I think that the iPhone 6 display looks fantastic, you're not allowed to then say, nah, you're stupid. I can prove to you that you don't prefer this display. See, look at this graph. Look at what this triangle is and amongst that graph. So it's valuable as far as it goes, but that's only one part of the story. And this is part of I had one of those eat my own dog food sort of moments earlier this year when I was buying my camera, where I was spending a lot of time. It was between three or four different models that I was having a hard time choosing between. I kind of had the instinct that the Olympus OMD EM1 was going to be the one for me, but I was looking at all the technical explanations of the differences between the image sensors on DxO and the scores that DxO Mark was giving for each one of them. And I was almost allowing myself to tell myself that no, the Fuji takes better pictures than the X100 takes better pictures than the Olympus. See, look at this graph. And I had to sort of walk away from it for 2 days to think about the totality of the experience that a camera provides and all the things outside of this. What they're only looking at this little wafer of millions and millions of transistors to tell you about how these millions and millions of transistors interact. Whereas the difference between the Olympus and the Fuji was that the Olympus has this amazing five-axis digital image optical image stabilization that compensates for pretty much whatever failings you think it has. And so I think it's the same thing here. I think it's significant that someone is coming up with empirical mathematical evidence that one display is better than the other, but I don't think anybody's going to be buying an iPad instead of a Surface 3 instead of an iPad or MacBook Air because of this score that came out. The only thing that's kind of interesting about it is that if it points to anything, it points to the need for Apple to at least want to. I'm sure that they want to be able to say that we not only have the best perceptive screen, we also have the best technical screen. And so if that means that will put more money into whatever department has to work on that, then guess what? They just got upgraded from generic cola to name brand Coke and Pepsi in the break room.
I do have to say that that's obviously not the reason you would choose one phone over the other. It's one of many factors. But I do have to say the Note 4, if you can bear Samsung and you can bear the Note 4 screen is, and I've played with all these phones, consistently the best looking screen. And that's a big departure for Samsung, because these Super AMOLED displays have traditionally not been very color accurate.
Yeah. Well, also the difference is
that stunning display.
Yeah, it is. I have been using both of them for the past 3-4 weeks. Yeah. And I do think it's a gorgeous, gorgeous display. And one of the things that keeps coming up whenever people talk about displays in a technical way that, you're only responding to the Samsung display because it's more higher contrast and like deeper colors. And it's like when McDonald's puts more salt and spices into the meats. And,
right.
Yes, but people like salt and spices. That's why people like this cheeseburger very,
it tastes
very much.
Better.
Yeah.
There's a couple other things that are worth considering here, too. One is that what are the specific technologies good for? Like, for example, dual domain pixels, they don't make much of a difference if you're staring straight at a phone. But if the phones get bigger and you want people sitting next to you, then it helps improve the way that people next to you see the screen, or the new polarization filter. If you're wearing sunglasses, you know, if you're not wearing sunglasses, it makes no difference. If you're wearing sunglasses, then it stops the interference pattern. And the other thing is that the technology itself isn't an indicator, the way Andy said, because it also depends quite often. Like Amazon had much better screens in their tablets before Apple did, because that technology just wouldn't scale yet. And when you bought as many screens as Amazon did, it was fine. But you couldn't put those on iPads because you'd need way more than the technology could provide. So it's a very delicate sort of balancing act. My thinking is just that as long as they're close to each other, I'm happy, because it means everyone is being pushed. The iPad Mini 3, it still has a much worse screen than the regular iPad. And I hope stuff like this puts pressure on Apple to give it that laminated display and that full color gamut faster, because when something lags behind, the competition is good for it. When something is raging ahead, it means the competitors will catch up and drive them even more forward. So I like these tests just so much as it drives the entire industry forward.
Yeah.
I will say, I'm in like deep test mode now on the Surface 3. I love the screen on the Surface 3. It is just
people are
beautiful.
Raving about it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I've got it in front of me right now with my show notes, and my daily driver is a MacBook Pro Retina that I bought late at the last winter, and so that's no slouch either. But yikes. It's like this could be this. It's not something you. This is something that I keep coming back to. That there's better, and then there's better that you only notice when you have two things side by side. But yeah, the Surface 3 screen is just better.
Yeah,
just can't get the tiles off mine.
I have to say, there's some really wonky stuff about TouchWiz and everything, but
yeah,
it is sometimes the case that the screen is so good that you just go, I'm gonna sacrifice other things because I just.
Samsung really is like the Charlie Brown of like phone makers, where like he will be like 10 feet away from the finish line, about to win the big road race for the first time and finally win something. And he'll find a way to, I'm supposed to turn off this way, not go that way. It's like, just give us stock Android. It's fine. It'll be so much, but no, don't do anything. It's when I'm testing the cameras, for instance, this conceivably has one of the best cameras that you can buy in a phone.
That's
and
an
I include the
camera.
iPhone 6,
yeah.
But it tries to help you out in ways that make it one of the most annoying cameras to possibly use. It's like I had to reshoot a whole test sequence because it was taking terrible pictures because it kept trying to be adaptive and improve things for me.
Yeah.
When, I turn off this, turn off that, turn off that, turn off that, turn off this. That's why
it over-sharpens, definitely.
Really over-sharpens. It goes to really weird low light modes where it starts warning you, please, I'm going to use a super, super low shutter speed, so hold the phone really, really steady. And it's never going to be able to get a good sharp image like that. It's like I think that you almost have to do two different reviews of any Samsung device. You have to review the version that people are paying $200 for with contract, and then you have to review the $700 one, Google Play, Google Experience one, because, boy, are those – if you buy it with stock Android, it is such a competitive phone with absolutely everything out there. Once you put TouchWiz on it, it's not a bad phone, but it's not as good a phone as it could possibly be.
I am I'm kind of hoping that I can get a generic ROM on this Note 4. Although, you know, there is a lot of touch in it, you know, using the stylus that will go away, a lot of features that will go away. But, boy, the image quality is just dramatic. It's gorgeous.
That's the same complaint I was about to have, because I think that when I'm disappointed with the display, it's because it really is adding too much salt, adding too much spices, adding too much fat to the recipe. When if you just let the display do what it's supposed to do, it'll do fine. There are don't read the comments on that article about the screen differences, because oh my God, it is like I didn't know that there are soccer hooligans that write about that are interested in phones, but we got the Apple soccer hooligans and we got the Samsung soccer hooligans. But there is a good point raised, which is that the screen does have several different modes you can set manually if you want.
Right.
This Note 4 has this special thing where it will try to figure out that, you're in the Gallery Photos app, so I'm going to fine-tune it so that photos look really good. Mm-hmm. You're now just scrolling through a list, so I'm going to fine-tune it so that I'm going to make the colors bolder and sharper and brighter so that it's easier to navigate apps. And I think there was some question as to what mode that they were testing in when they were completing these tests, but I'm sure that they made it a fair playing ground for everybody, because I don't think that this company has the reputation for being dopes.
They use the basic screen mode, which is not the adaptive mode. So there's four display. There's adaptive display, AMOLED Cinema, which is, I don't know how these are different, AMOLED Photo, which is a little bit more muted, and then basic. And they say they use the basic screen mode.
But man, AMOLED is getting so much better.
I have to say, yeah.
Even the new TVs are looking fantastic.
Yeah. Anyway, it's hard for me to put this phone down as much as I want to hate it. It's hard. Now, let me point out this article from Ole Begeman, who is an iOS developer. He calls it iPhone 6 Plus Pixel Peeping. Mm-hmm. And Renee, I'm going to have to defer to you on this one because I did not realize this. It is a very, he says the iPhone 6 Plus, this is the big one, renders things differently than every other iOS device to date. To developers, which he is, the device exposes a screen rectangle of 414 by 736, which the system renders at 3x scale into a backing store, not an on-screen display, but a backing store of 1242 by 2208. Now, of course, it's a 1920 by 1080 display, so the backing store is then, and this I always thought this was a bad idea, downsampled by 13% to the native resolution. In other words, normally when you have a display, the ideal resolution is the native resolution, dot for dot, on the display. That's what you want to do. But that's not what Apple is doing with this. In fact, they're downscaling, which traditionally will give you some blurring and some weird artifacts. Now, he says that in practice, the resolution is so high that I haven't noticed this, but he did take some up-close screenshots to give you an example. And what he's done is he's created a grid of vertical green hairlines with varying spacing on a black background. Now, and this is perfect on the screen. And this is at 1242 by 2208. So this is every line. Of course, if you're watching our video, it's heavily compressed, so you won't see this. But every line on this is exactly right. And you can see, I can even see on our TV moiré-ing over here on the left, which is in fact not the case. So you should read the article at OLEB.net. Then he talks about the rendered three times scale and then downsampling. And this is a photo of the screen. And I think you can see clearly the artifacting on these lines because of the downsampling. Now, do you see that on screen? Probably not, but I think it could impact the iPhone 6 Plus screen in the sense that it might make you feel like it's not as crisp as it could be. So, Renee, what do you think?
So, I mean, it was noticeable to everybody before apps updated because they would upsample them from the old resolution.
And it was 5S. Really bad. Yeah, I did notice that. By the way, this is an iPhone 5, which is rendered at 2X, and so you don't get any of the image issues. Because you don't
It's rendered at 2X and displayed at 2X.
Right.
There's no scaling.
It's rendered at there's no scaling. So that's an iPhone 5. That's a 6 Plus. And admittedly, he had to zoom in a lot to see this.
So, I mean, if you're Lorne Brichter, you will probably notice this and it might drive you crazy.
Right.
Not everyone is going to notice this. And there's a history of different display technologies and who can notice them and who can't, because it's just not something that everybody pays attention to, and not everybody can actually notice the difference. Some people will see a slight flickering when they move horizontally because it changes which pixels are on and off differently because of the scaling.
Right.
For most people, the resolution is so high, that's why the density is so high, over 400 dpi, that you won't notice any difference. The advantage to the way Apple did it is that they could have gone to 1080p and just created an arbitrary screen target for developers now, but that's not very future-proof. By going to at 3x right now, it means that one day when they get a display that has the logical resolution of the frame buffer, it'll be perfect. It'll be exact, and developers won't have to, you know, ditch the 1080p resolution and start making 3x assets. There were some rumors that Apple was trying to get a display that density in the iPhone 6 Plus, and they just couldn't do it, so they went to plan B, which is 1080p. But whether that's true or not, next year, the year after that, there will be an at 3x native display, and all of the apps built for it will be fine. You can target 1080p today if you use OpenGL. They'll let you call directly.
So you can make a 1080p image.
If you know OpenGL well enough and you really, really want to go to the trouble of doing it. But for most people, there's absolutely no difference. You've got to break out the macro the way he did to really notice those kinds of things.
Right. All right. So there are people in the chat room who say they can't see it.
There's a percentage of people who can. It's back when they had those old, I forget the screen technology, but, you know, some people can always see small disturbances. Depends on the acuity of your vision.
Yeah.
And your sensitivity to movement.
I think I think you may not notice it exactly, but you may say, I mean, it is certainly not desirable to do that 13% scaling, the downsample. That is not desirable.
As you go to, I mean, it's the tension between that and making adaptive UIs, because you want developers to be able to target. And this is a problem everyone has to face. Yeah. You have fragments on Android and other things. Yeah. WebOS tried to do it. Everyone has to find a way to sort of paint variable size screens, and they're doing it on the Mac as well. And they have very good scalers that try to identify objects and make those objects as crisp as possible and not just do one-to-one pixel downsampling. So it is just a challenge, and it is, you know, it's the awkward teenage years of displays going
high
density.
Text looks fine, right?
1080p video will be rendered to 1080p, so that'll always look fine. I believe games will be painted at the same resolution, especially if they're using OpenGL or Metal or something like that. It's really only interface elements like single pixel horizontal or vertical lines that you'll start to notice that stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, to me, the text on the 6 Plus looks really, really crisp.
Some people can notice one frame being dropped from a 60 frame per second video.
Some people are magic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it may contribute to the, to me, apparent superiority of the Note 4 screen. I mean, it may contribute to that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's assuming there's no scaling on the Note.
Well, actually, I don't know. That's a good question. The Note is 2560 by 1440. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And who knows if that's...
Yeah, there was a Sharp panel being showed off that was 700 DPI in Japan recently.
Come on. Come on, man. You can't tell the difference.
It's silly.
And then there's the issues. You know, I'm having all sorts of Wi-Fi issues on this Note 4, as probably people have noticed. Things aren't loading. And I haven't had that trouble on the other phones. So which is more important, that your phone is fast and works or that its screen looks great?
Nah. That's the most frustrating thing right now with all these devices. The operating systems are complex enough and all our personal setups are so different that a small percentage of people have Wi-Fi issues on every version of iOS and every update. A small percentage of people have almost every issue on almost every platform.
Right.
And it's not everybody.
Right. I don't know. I raise these things because you should know, right?
There was another great article. Someone took a microscope to the iPhone 6 display to see why it was, because the iPhone 5S was laminated as well, but the iPhone 6 looks even better. And it turns out the pixels are even closer to the surface, even with the anti-glare coating and the polarization. There's the screen itself is much thinner, so the pixels look even closer. And a lot of people notice that now, and they go back to a 5S and say, oh, I'm looking through a piece of glass.
Yeah.
It's horrible. Can't go back.
iPhone 6 drives huge downloads in October, VentureBeat writing, but marketing costs finally fall slightly. This is the cost per loyal user index. I don't know what the hell. Dean Takahashi writing, and tell me, I don't know what this is. App and game makers. This is from a company called Fiksu, F-I-K-S-U. In October, the launch of the iPhone 6 and iOS 8 drove record download volumes for the most popular apps. Okay. On top of that, the cost of acquiring users dipped a little. That's probably, you know, just math. Mm-hmm. But as the holiday season,
what's the cost of a disloyal user, Leo?
Churn is expensive, right? If you pay a certain amount of money to market to somebody and they sign up, you know, Netflix, you know, pays whatever, I don't know, $50 to get a new subscription. You want to keep that person for a year so that you can, you know, pay off the cost of acquiring them and then get some money out of them. If they drop Netflix in 2 months, that's called churn, and that means it costs you more to get the user than it did to keep, you know, that you lost
retention
them.
Is cheaper than acquisition.
There, thank you for making that much clearer. And then there's the Fiksu cost per launch index. The blue is iOS. The green is Android. Obviously costs a little more to market on iOS because there's a lot more choices. Brands and big companies spend a lot of money to get attention for their games and apps. That increases the cost of acquiring users via advertising on mobile devices, and so that's gone up steadily.
So many graphs.
I don't know what it means. What is it? Oh, you want another one? Here's the CPI index, the cost per launch index. which tracks the cost of driving engagement from mobile users. That grew 24% from September to 26 cents in October, up 39% from a year ago.
Fiksu sounds like a curse word. It's all I keep thinking.
The iOS cost per install went up to $1.46. So that's the $50 I was talking about with the Netflix example. The cost to get a user install your game is roughly $1.46. See, this is a good to know, though. When you say, oh, I think it shouldn't cost 99 cents, what's it worth? It cost them $1.46 to get you to download it. The 99 cents, take out Apple's 30%. That's 66 cents they get. That's not going to cover it. That's why in-app purchases are so popular.
Yep.
They track 3.5 billion app installs and 5.4 trillion marketing events across 1.7 billion devices. Sounds like Fixu knows.
Sounds like they're really busy.
They're very busy. The cost per loyal user, or CPLU, on Android was 10 cents in October. Cheap. They're cheap. And how loyal are they? I don't know. Wow, that's wild. I don't know what these numbers are, but apparently app developers care a lot about this kind of stuff.
I feel like I need Horace Dedieu to translate.
Yeah, Horace, what is going on here? It is very simple, Leo. If you only paid attention to the numbers, it would be clear. What, you fool?
Can you reduce it to an easily repeatable buzzword that someone with interesting hair can then talk about during a TED Talk?
Are you talking about, what is his name, Shingy?
I'm specifically not talking about Shingy because I am sick and tired of people giving Shingy crap.
Why?
I'm tired of it.
Why?
Well, because I think it's I don't know about you, but at one point I went to junior high school, okay? And I remember, like, all you have to do is, like, one kid shows up. This wasn't me, but, like, you show up in a bowler hat just as a goop for one thing, and suddenly everybody says, okay, we're going to make fun of this kid for the next 5 years, and, like, only because we remember how the one time he wore the bowler hat. We're not going to ask him about, like, what he thinks, what he feels. Does he take his library books back on time? Does he take good care of his dog? No. We're just going to, yeah, see? And I think that's how he looks. But let's not make fun of someone because of how they look.
I think he was born that way, Andy. There's a difference.
I think the problem is that people don't listen to what I don't think I've ever read an article about him that actually said in substance what he does, what his philosophies are, and what really moves and drives him.
Oh, okay. Then you got to read this New Yorker article.
I've read the New Yorker article, and it talks about, oh, look, he went in and he redesigned his boss's office. And, oh, look, he had a conversation in which he talked about this thing that this odd idea that he had on his iPad Mini during a long, long flight. And it's like, what you could make just as silly a video. Excuse me,
out of
maybe almost as silly, yeah. Almost a silly video about Johnny Ive.
Yeah.
Okay. Or about it's like he's obsessed with what kinds of metal. To us, it's like it's aluminum, it's wood or steel. For him, he spent like $1 million of Apple's money trying to figure out what kind of aluminum. Right. For God's sake.
Although Johnny Ive shipped an iPhone, I'm just waiting for AOL to ship an iPhone.
Shingy, he's their digital prophet.
I will defend anybody with interesting hair from people who seem to be complaining mostly that he has interesting hair. Write an article about here is what his job actually is at AOL. Here is how he has failed to do that job.
AOL pays him his job. He must be doing something right.
I'm saying that I could never. If I had to justify, like, my sideburns, if I had to justify, anything else that I... I could not do that. I would like to hope that people think that I'm an idiot for the things that I say and believe, not because of things that I have growing out of my head. That's all.
So, if you think about it, video will be everywhere, and the experience of it will be everywhere, even with things like wearables. But the thing about wearables today is it feels like, if I wear all my wearables, by the way, I look like a tribal leader. That's one. Look at one. But what I'm seeing in the future, what's going on right now, is multiple use cases.
I just love him. You know what? I want to hug the man. He gets a lot of crap for that. Really, you're right. It's about the hair. By the way, he does say he does talk in the New Yorker article about the hair and how he gets it that way and how long it takes him to get it that way. So he's aware of the hair.
Yeah, but like, was it a 4-hour interview in which he spends three and a half hours talking about, like, here's another set of graphs for you, and here's another deflection point based on blah, blah,
blah.
Here's an interesting story about Lady Anna that comes into
this. If he were working for a different company.
And he asked him the one question about his hair. So, oh, yeah, well, it takes less time than you think.
Right.
And now it's all about his hair.
Story. Yeah, I agree.
That's the hook.
If it were anybody but AOL, the problem is AOL has a little credibility that you kind of want.
If he was at Google, it'd be fantastic.
Right, and we go, look at this amazing guy at Google.
So now we're adding the kick company when it's down thing. So we're, now it's an asthmatic kid who wore a bowler hat that one time.
Sergey gets
that doesn't
it for
make
his.
It better, Leo.
It could be Sergey worse. He could be working for Uber.
Good people.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
They would call him the Uber Goober if he worked for Uber.
Uber Guru.
Apple has relabeled the free buttons on the iTunes and Mac App Store to get, just in case. If you were looking
to the EU.
That's the EU. They said, and they made Google do the same thing. They said, you know what? If something's free but has in-app purchases, you really shouldn't call it free. So get.
It's interesting now because you have the price tag on paid apps, and then you have get on free or free, you know, with in-app purchase or subscription apps. You press the price tag, and it says buy. You press the get button, and it changes to install.
Right.
And you know, I understand that the EU wants them to change stuff, but as a user experience thing, it's still
better.
Yeah. Like if I just gave someone who wasn't familiar with this stuff a Google Play or an App Store device, I still don't know if they successfully navigate and understand the nuances of.
Yeah.
How the buying.
What did Google do? Because Google was the first to change there. Let me just look at apps and see. Let's see. I'm sure some of these have in-app purchases. Well, it says free, but it doesn't say free on the button. It says install on the button. They still talk about free apps. Candy Crush Soda Saga. That's certainly got in-app purchases.
They listed in the details. If you
now they have to now they say
now
it's
they
got
have
in-app.
To say the price yeah. range of the lowest and highest cost item in-app purchases.
But if you're looking for absolutely free apps that don't have any strings attached, this still makes it no easier to find those.
No, I think you're right. And Google doesn't say free; they say. A little print underneath the install button, in-app purchases.
Which they've been saying that for a while now. What they added recently is if you go into the more details about it, it has a little column for kind of the price
how
range.
Much. But Apple's done that too.
Yeah, Apple has underneath the title the in-app purchase
in-app
text.
In-app purchase text, yeah.
And they have
what they're worried about, I think, mostly is kids, right?
I think they're worried about, they're worried about
kids
adults having very... people having bad experiences and they're not becoming less frequent as time goes by.
Right. And I don't think that's going to change that either, frankly.
But a little extra transparency, I think, is welcome.
Yeah.
I think that this is not something that was, this is not a consumer to Apple relationship because this was not mediated by Apple themselves. But I think that might be a bad consumer experience that Apple would be very, very interested in solving. Because there are people that just did not know that it was possible for their kid found a way, despite whatever fail-safes that Apple or Google or whoever put into this device, they managed to rack up $400 worth of expenses by buying donuts or whatever it is that these kids do with their beep boops. and that's a pain point and something that really should be sanded down.
iOS will have Beats Music bundled into it, according to the Financial Times. I would go to the Financial Times article, but it's behind a paywall, so let's just give MacRumors.com the credit here. Apple will bundle a subscription music service it acquired from Beats into its iOS operating system early next year, says FT, instantly making it available on hundreds of millions of iPhones and iPads and ramping up pressure on Spotify. It will there'll still be a paid-for service. It's not going to be free.
The big question there is they say hundreds of millions of devices, which means it has to go beyond the U.S., yet Beats is still U.S. only. iTunes radio is still U.S. and Australia only.
Right.
And I don't know whether they've been waiting to go international until they did the merger because, you know, they obviously knew about it, or if they still are going to find it really difficult to go international. But the way the article reports it doesn't seem to, you know, conform to reality as I understand it.
Well, and the Financial Times is in England, right?
Yeah. And there's neither of those there.
Are available, yeah. Will they rebrand it? Will it say Beats? It could be as easy as just putting the app on the phones and the tablets, right? I mean, that's all it means. Or does it mean that iTunes Radio will be modified to have Beats Music in it?
Well, iTunes Radio is not separate. There was rumors that it would go separate prior to the Beats launch, and it's still inside the music app. So what would make sense, I mean, I can't say what, because I don't run app. I'm not Eddie Q. But what would be interesting is if they spun it off into a separate app that combined both the subscription Beats service and the iTunes Radio service.
And they were supposedly going to do that. That was the rumor, right? Yeah.
And the rumor is also they're going to rebrand Beats into something iTunes and leave the Beats brand for the headphones.
Yeah, because it's not like the Beats streaming music service has huge customer uptake. It's still probably one of the smallest, only because it's one of the last.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to preserve that brand. What you want to preserve, though, is the really cool way that Beats Music lets you choose what you want to listen to. You kind of construct a sentence. You know, I want to listen to EDM music in a dance hall with Shingy, and then it will play the appropriate tunes.
The human curation part is what they were really interested right. in.
Oh, is that a Letterman sweater you're wearing? Like you double letter in both swimming and football and basketball.
Are you mocking me?
No, I'm just saying. Just,
you know. My hair looks normal. So, but what is normal, right? On the planet Shingy, my hair would look flat.
In anime, he is the normal one.
He's the normal one.
Yeah.
It was last week, right at the showtime that the Apple released the Apple Watch SDK in a movie, and we were kind of trying to parse it in real time as we watched and read. Since then, any more insights into what Apple Watch means? Renee?
The overall impression.
Go ahead, Andy.
Renee, I'm sorry. I know you've gone deeper dive than I have. I spent a day watching the videos and talking to people about it, but I'm mostly trying to figure out what I felt about it.
Right.
Basically, it impressed me that how interesting the difference between having a watch that runs its own operating system and has a great level of autonomy and only chooses to show off its power by how intimate the connection is between the pocket device and the wrist device is different from Apple Watch, which is we're putting all of our processing power into hosting the greatest user interface we can possibly put on a wrist, and we're going to lean on the phone as much as possible for the things that we do with it. So I don't know how that's going to express itself in the form of actual apps. We basically, in the past week, we've only kind of underscored some of the things we hit on last week, which is that chiefly the watch is going to, in the first iteration of the software, is going to be simply receiving notifications and returning actions to a phone app. It's going to be pretty much a dumb terminal. It's going to be like a VT100 only on your wrist. And self-hosted apps are going to come much later in the year. More interesting is what Apple was talking about, what the role of a watch app is going to be. My mind was set at ease when they were talking about how glances, not long, lingering, loving looks. That's not a direct quote, but that's pretty much what they're talking about, where they used as one example an app that's the American Airlines app, where if someone just looks at it, it will just simply say, here's what your flight status is. If you hold the watch in that position, then it will go a little bit deeper. But at no point is Apple encouraging people to do things like change their seat assignment or check in for a flight through the watch, that this is the point at which we hand you off back to the phone for deeper things. So that did set my mind at ease, because I was very, very worried, given the demo they gave in September, that maybe they're expecting me to spend a lot of time futzing around with this little device that has so many controls on it. So we're still guessing, but there's more optimism, I think, for me than there was a couple months ago.
Renee, what did you take away?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, Apple has said native apps are coming next year. So coming next year, you'll be able to do all the sorts of independent apps. You'll be able to go jogging with your watch and not have to worry that you're leaving your apps essentially behind if you don't have your phones with you. The way it is right now, it's very similar to pre-iPhone SDK, where there were web apps. And when you were disconnected from the internet, the app essentially couldn't update. Right now, it requires the phone. So when you're not connected to your phone, your apps will not be able to update. And that's going to dictate a lot of what developers can do with it. But it's a short-term thing. Whether Apple just doesn't have time now or they don't have the right things in place, that'll get solved next year. For now, it's really interesting because exactly what Andy said is that they've staged this by attention. And if you look at the verbs that they use, they're short look and long look notifications. And if your watch is down or pointed away from you, privacy comes into play because it only gives you the short look. It gives you an icon and not much else. If you bring it close to you, it gives you the long look. But also in low power mode, if it starts running low on battery, it'll stop doing long look notifications and just do the short look ones. So it's staging them based on attention and based on power consumption. Then glances, they're not calling them widgets. They're giving them a very verb, you know, active sort of a name. And that gives you a little bit more information even. So you go from short look to long look to glance. And then you have the WatchKit apps, which are essentially the interface runs on the phone and all the logic is, sorry, the interface runs on the watch and all the logic is behind on the phone. And that's sort of a bet that Bluetooth connectivity is less power intensive and better for a WatchKit style app than actually making the processor do it on the watch itself, which kind of gives you a hint of where Apple's emphasis is for this. They want to do everything they can to make sure the phone is as the watch is as power efficient as possible. And then you get into it, and it's really interesting because as much as the as iOS and OS X have gone white, Apple's asking developers to go black with the WatchKit apps because the phone has a very large bezel and it's black. And if you make the app black, it's going to look widescreen on you. And if you make it bright, it's going to look very small. And they're also stressing what makes sense. What makes sense for somebody to glance at? A lot of apps simply aren't going to make sense on the watch. It's going to be much easier to get your phone and do anything intensive. But something that's just convenient-based, whether you want to check, you want to glance at your logging, you want to do a quick NFC payment, so an Apple Pay payment, you want to get an update on a status, that's a very quick engagement, a very quick interaction, and you can do that on the watch. So it looks like this is really, really well thought out. And like we said last week, totally, you know, a lot based on extensibility, a lot based on continuity, which seems like a very virtuous cycle for them and easy to understand for developers. So it's all going to come down to what sort of experiences they can get on that watch come launch time.
Yeah. It's interesting to see how much control they give to developers and then to the users. That is something that I wouldn't say that I worried about. But when you're talking about going to low battery mode and then the watch making a decision not to do things that are battery intensive, well, sometimes you're like, look, I got this battery. This watch just pardon me. This watch just has to last me 10 minutes until I board the plane. And until I board the plane, I really need to know this information that I'm trying to get off of it. Don't try to help me by making it harder for me to find something I need for you this watch to do. And it's such an interesting concept because people are still completely malleable on what a watch should do and how it should behave and what their reaction should be. So this launch is going to be so important. Apple can get away with pretty much whatever they want, except for not matching one of the 1 million expectations people have of this device. So there's so much room for so many different approaches to it, and I think it's still going to be a couple of years until people figure out what a smartwatch should do, in the same way that it took a while for them to figure out what a graphical user interface app should be or what a mobile app should be.
It's also, I mean, it's a big bet on the experience. If you've used extensibility or you've used continuity a lot, especially continuity with handoff, sometimes it's absolutely instant and sometimes you can count to 10 or 15 or 20 before it happens. And it's not a huge deal because you have the other devices. But on the watch, that's the entire sum total of experiences until native apps hit. And if it's 20 seconds to get an update, there might be a frustration level that doesn't exist on any other device.
Yeah, Apple has to do the thing that they often do, which is this has to work, it has to work, it has to work. And if it does not work 100% of the time, we should not ship this or we should not include this feature here. I mean, I like so many things about my Android Wear watch, but one of them is that it does pretty much the same thing where it will give you answers and short interactions, but at some point it will hand you back off to the phone. And I've never had a problem where I'll get that big button saying open on phone. I tap the button, and by the time I take my phone out of my pocket, the screen is lit up and it's showing me the information that I actually want, which is why I actually use it as opposed to like don't bother with it, because if there's a 1 out of 10 chance it's not going to do anything, it's just not – I will never get in the habit of relying on it. So if Apple just makes the first iteration so good that people come to trust and rely on it, no matter how limited the feature set is, that's going to be the big win.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, gentlemen, prepare your picks. But first, it's time to shave. Everybody together. Oh, you're not shaving for November. This is our last Mac Break Weekly for the month of Movember. That's the month that many men around the world stop shaving for to raise awareness for men's health issues. But if you are getting prepared to shave it off come December 1st, if your special other person and your life says, shave that beard or mustache, then I got to tell you about Harry's. And take a look at these beautiful kits from Harry's. This would be a great gift for the holidays. Harry's was started by guys who think razors are too expensive. They figured there's a better way to do this. In fact, they wanted to make sure that you got the best quality razors and blades, so they actually bought a factory in Germany. They bought the factory, this is commitment, to create really good blades. Historically, almost all the world's razor blade factories have been controlled by the big name brands. That's how come they could charge you like $4 a blade. Yeah, that's the model, isn't it? We've even said that. You know, you give away the razor and you make it up on the blade. Well, Harry's wants to change things. They are now the only brand in the world that makes blades and sells direct. And that's how they can get the price down to so much less, about half as much as you might spend for, say, a Gillette Fusion blade. All because of this wonderful factory, which has been making some of the world's best blades since 1920. 400 German engineers, designers, craftsmen, and workers build and create very sophisticated equipment to give you the best shave possible. At Harry's, I want you to go to harrys.com and take a look at the various packages. This is a very inexpensive holiday gift that will make the guy in your life very happy. The Truman set, $15. And for $15, you get three blades. You get the razor handle, which is beautiful. You get the shave gel, the foaming shave gel, which smells fabulous and really works. They also have the Winston set. That's what I have. That's $25. And there's a new winter Winston. Oh, it has some nice new colors, a blue and a kind of an ice blue and a black. These kits are a great deal, but the best part about Harry's is then getting your blades delivered to you monthly or every other month. You get to choose. It's Movember. If you're not shaving, don't worry. Harry's is making a donation to the Movember Fund to show their support. But when it's time to shave, and even if you have a beard, you really probably should, you know, clean it up. Go to Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. You'll be getting $5 off your very first purchase when you use our code MacBreak. $5 off your first purchase only when you go to harrys.com and enter the code MacBreak at checkout. Wait a minute, you get $5 off your first purchase. That means for $10 you could get the Truman set. You don't have to tell your loved one that you saved so much money. But I tell you, he's going to be very happy. It feels so good. It works so well. And you will just love it. I shave every morning and every night now with Harry's. I like it so much. Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. Don't forget to use our offer code MacBreak to save $5 off your first purchase at harrys.com. Every man deserves Harry's.
It's like a hovercraft for your face, Leo. It's fantastic.
We sent you one, right? But do you know, you have a large
once
beard.
A week. Once a week I use it. Like
just clean up your neck and stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
I know people who shave more, like me, because of we have our Harry's and we love it. The kit, it looks nicer than this. I've deconstructed it.
Once you hold it, you don't want to hold those cheap plastic blades anymore.
Oh, if you're still buying disposable blades, shame on you. That's no way to treat your face. That's no way to treat your face. All right, time for our picks of the week. And I have picked something just for you, Andy Iannotko. I know how you feel about singing. You're famous for your love of, is it Donna Damaro?
Dana Damaro.
Yes. So, and I'm sure you're probably a fan of the wonderful Disney movie, Frozen. Now you can get Frozen karaoke on your Macintosh.
And parents rejoice. Finally, the kids were almost not singing that song now. Now we can get them to keep singing it for another
forever and ever and ever. Sing along with your favorite. There are 9 songs on here, $7.99. Kids will love it. And you get the lyrics.
Do you want to build a snowman? Come on, let's go and play. I never see you anywhere. Come out the door.
So you could turn her on or off.
If they just added auto-tune, I'd be so into this.
Oh, why don't they have auto-tune? You can record yourself as you sing along. So, do you want to build a snowman?
Leo, when I come to Twit, I expect to not hear Frozen
music.
Doesn't
have to be a
snowman. Because
I
hear it all the time at home.
I bet Lucy loves Frozen.
Oh, I can't even tell you. Thousands of times we've heard the
If song. She's going to love something, Frozen's a good thing for her to love, right?
Yes.
I think so. It's a wonderful movie.
I agree.
And they have 9 songs from the movie. You could choose your song, sing along, record your small child singing. It's so much fun. And notice next to the floppy disk icon, which small children probably won't recognize, there is a trash can icon, which parents will know. Means throw this thing out.
You want to build a snowman?
Issue, dear. Why are you holding?
Am I giving you chills, Jason?
I'm just realizing how much I know the words of this entire soundtrack. I don't need those words at the bottom of the screen. Can I turn those off? Because I don't need them.
That's a good question. I don't know. I could turn off the singing, but I don't know if I can turn off the words.
Can we get a couple of verses from Jason? Just
no.
So I got a few flaws, like it's peculiar brain, dear.
This is not about me.
All right.
It's $7.99 on the App Store. Now we take it to Mr. Rene Ritchie for his much more appropriate pick of the week.
I've got two. The first one is well known. It's probably been picked before, but it's recently been updated. It's Deliveries by JuneCloud. And it's a great app that lets you track when you're doing all your holiday shopping. If you're shopping online and you're going to have stuff delivered to you and you want to make sure you know what day it's arriving, that you're home to get it, Deliveries. It used to be called Deliveries Touch for iOS. It's always been my go-to app. And now it's been updated for iOS 8. And it includes a Today View widget. So you don't have to actually launch the app anymore. You can just pull down the notification center, make sure that you're actually on the Today screen. And the widget will be right there. And it'll tell you when all your packages are arriving. I've been using it all week to track, you know, various stuff that I've bought. And it's funny because widgets, they're not surfaced enough that a lot of people know about them. But once you know about them, everything from pCalc to I use it for Dropbox. It's so quick to get access to this information from anywhere. I don't even have to go back to the home screen anymore. I just pull down the shade no matter where I am, and it tells me right there. And I don't suffer that problem anymore of you hit the home screen button, you get there, and then you forget why it was you hit the home screen button and end up opening Twitter again.
I thought it was just my age. Okay, good. That's good to know.
No, apparently it's a psychological thing. It's like when you go through doorways, anytime you change state, it's hard to remember what transpired between the two states. So that's my excuse anyway, Leo, because I'm old too.
I'm changing states. So you know what? This is a good tip. As long as we're showing you, pull down your notification shade, scroll down to the bottom. You see, I have a lot of notifications, and there's an edit button. Once you hit the edit button, you can see which ones are turned on. Oddly enough, they have the red icon. That's because if you hit it, it may turn it off. Yeah. But then there's a list, and as you install apps, this list gets longer of all the apps you've already got installed that have notifications. So you can add those notifications just by tapping that. And the green button and adding it to your notifications list. So if you don't know what special widgets are available, there's the list right there in the notifications.
And it really helped me out because I ordered a 13-inch MacBook Pro.
I love this. Yeah.
And it was supposed to come on Wednesday, so I made sure I was on Wednesday. But then I saw in delivery status that it was coming on Monday, and I quickly changed my plans, and it did arrive on Monday. So I would have totally missed the delivery if I hadn't been keeping track of it.
How does it work? Do you have to have it scan your email?
I just enter in the tracking number. There might be smarter ways of doing it, but I've been using it since, I think, iOS 2. So I stuck with what I know.
Yeah, I have a program on Android called Slice that scans your Gmail, and then so it auto-adds everything as long as you get an email notification about shipments.
Yeah, I don't give people – I'm just
– I know, yeah. Well, that's why I ask, because some people don't want to do that. Yeah, yeah. So this way, you just put the tracking number in, and you'll know.
Yeah.
Awesome.
The other pick I had, and it's just a quick one. It's due disclosure. It's a guy that I co-host a podcast with who made the app, but it's called Stringer. And what it does is it shuffles. If you're used to just shuffling music and you want to shuffle to the next song, it's one thing. But if you're shuffling and you decide you really like the song and you want to hear the next one on the album, or you want to do anything that involves customizing between the shuffles, Stringer is great. I don't listen to a lot of music. I watch much more TV than I do music. But I found this really useful because when I do listen to something, it hits some sort of sense memory in me, and then I'm hearing an ABBA song, and all of a sudden I really want to hear the next one on that list,
right?
And you go right into it, and it's very visual. It's a really nice looking app. It's super easy to navigate, and it's a great way if you are a fan of shuffled music but you just always wish you had more control over it than a pure random shuffle. Stringer gives you a lot of great control.
So this replaces the shuffle feature in iTunes with its own shuffle through your iTunes list. You know, one thing I always wish I could see is the previous songs. Can you go back? Can you go up and down in that list and see what you listened to?
I never tried, but the way it looks to me like you could. I'll have to test that.
Yeah. And I actually like the UI. Nicely done.
Like it's their first app, and it turned out, I think, really nicely. Yeah.
Stringer, and it is from heyderby.com. H-E-Y-D-E-R-B-Y.
It's the product branch of Nickelfish. And Nickelfish, you've never heard of them, but they've done a lot of the very popular, like if you've used a corporate app, for a hotel or a car company or something, you might have used their work before.
Should we talk to them about doing a Twit app?
They're good. I mean, they're
sure they're expensive good. As well, but we should talk to them. We wanted to do kind of reference apps for Twit.
They did the first version of the iMore app.
Oh, well, there you go. I will talk to them. I'll email you offline.
Sure.
And finally, Andy Iannocco's pick of the week. Andy?
Mine's an oldie but a goodie, and also a very situationally one. It's Things for iOS by Cultured Code. There are to-do list managers, and then there are to-do project goals, aspirations managers. And the king of that category is certainly OmniFocus. But the thing is, these are kind of complicated apps where it doesn't really – if your habit is just to go into Evernote and just make to-do lists and then check things off, that doesn't translate directly to one of these big apps. Things is a little bit simpler than OmniFocus. That's what one of the differentiators that I've always had between the two. And also this week until the 28th, until the end of the week, it is free for iOS.
What?
It's normally $10. Yeah. We can get the iPhone That's version awesome. And the iPad version for free. The Mac version is 30% off also for the same amount of time. Again, it ends on November 28th. It's the Apple Store pick of the week. And so it's a really good opportunity if you think that your life and your work and your personal life could be improved by switching from, again, Evernote simple to-do lists to a real task and goal manager. This is a cheap way to get into that and see if you can adapt your way of thinking towards the highly structured way of project management that these apps help you to do. Normally $10, probably worth $20, and it's free for the next week.
That's a good deal. Yeah, $10. That was the one thing that always kept me from trying it is, it's $10.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. That's good.
It shows up. I mean, I hope this is a good opportunity for Cultured Code, because I love that on other platforms, you can simply get they can release a trial version.
Right.
And so you can really, on an app like this, $10 is not a lot of money for such a polished piece of software, but it's probably above the, what the hell, I'll give it a try threshold for most people.
Exactly.
So this is, not just a good opportunity if you're thinking about things, but also if you're thinking about making that step up from a checklist of to-dos to something that's a little bit more organized, a little bit more structured. I have to admit that I personally have never gotten my head around this highly structured project management idea, because what it tries to make you do is try to think in terms of what are the broader goals and where are the places and the opportunities you have to get items off of your to-do list and toward making your progress towards those goals. And I find that I find so much time trying to think about how this app wants me to contextualize the process of designing and building a new standing desk to just, well, what if I just simply have to-do list? Number one, design it. Number two, buy the lumber. Number three, cut it and then build it. So it's a really good opportunity for you to start messing around with this sort of stuff.
Lovely.
To-dos are the gym memberships of apps.
To-dos are the gym memberships. Well, that's
too you always. I always get more and more of them. And then I, sometime during the year, I stop going. But things is an amazing one.
Hey, by the way, we talked about this actually on iPad Today yesterday, but it's worth a mention that Carousel for Dropbox is now an app available for iOS. And that's a good one to mention too. If you've been storing your photos on Dropbox, this will give you a gallery of your photos on Dropbox.
And Ben on Twitter says that you can forward email to JuneCloud and they will automatically add it onto deliveries for you.
That's the easy way to do it.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. So if you've got JuneCloud to keep track of your package deliveries, just forward that first mail from them.
Yeah, track@junecloud.com, and it automatically adds it to
like
your
app. Trip it that way. I love that.
Yeah.
All right.
You know what the more sophisticated solution would be? Not only that, but also to figure out that you have an once it realizes that, okay, you have an iPhone delivery for Friday, to arrange for, well, here are delivery restaurants that will deliver pizzas and food to your own house so that you don't have to, leave the house in any for even 5 minutes.
Billion-dollar valuation, Andy.
Shall we schedule the post office to pick up the mail that you were going to go out to do before?
It's Uber for pizza.
Uber for pizza.
No, that's a bad word.
Wait a minute. That's a bad word. Don't say Uber anymore. Yeah, don't say Uber for anything.
Like, he's like the Lyft Cosby of stage act.
No. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for this edition of Mac Break Weekly. There was no news this week, so we made it a short show.
We're thankful for the lack of news.
Yeah, it gives us a chance to talk more. Andy Iannocco at the Chicago Sun-Times. Good to have you as always.
It's been a slice. I hope there's plenty of pumpkin pie in Pasadena
for
you guys.
Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Are you going somewhere? Are you doing anything?
I will be spending Thanksgiving with my family.
Nice. Very nice.
I have been asked to bring a covered dish. And so I'm going to have to go to the Stop and Shop, throw some elbows to make sure I get those tiny marshmallows and that little can of dried onions.
Because that's it.
I'll see that lady in hell before I let that other neighbor of mine get the last can of dried onions.
Do your people do cranberries? I think cranberries are grown out your way, are they not?
Yes, but the cranberry divide is just as sharp in Massachusetts and New England as it is anywhere else. And I've rarely been to a Thanksgiving with more than with above, let's say, 9 people, in which there was not the cranberries, the jelly and the fruit kind.
Yeah. Do you want the jelly? The Ocean Spray jelly in the can that when you put it in the dish still has the ribs from the can?
As long as it's produced by local growers, okay?
Or do you want the ones with
farm communities, the people who spend all their time waiting around in them bogs.
It's a bog. People don't know that.
Food on their children, Leo.
Cranberries grow in bogs. They're in swamps, and they have to go out in boats and get them.
I'm actually kind of depressed. There's this. There was a cranberry bog that I used to drive past like at least 3 times a week. It's in Walpole, or it's either Walpole or Norwood. The those of you who know suburban Boston, and it's like, and now even when the cranberry bog is dry, it's like, oh, that's where they grow cranberries. And now there's big signs they're turning into the land into a condo development.
Oh.
And I'm like, that's not more interesting than cranberries.
Nothing's more interesting than cranberry bog.
I used to look
bog.
Forward to driving past and seeing, oh, look, they flooded the bogs. They're about ready to harvest.
You're going to regret that.
And then there's those magical times when you're actually there when you see the big boom that's swinging around, like, oh, man.
This is part
of our cultural heritage as New Englanders.
I know. I grew up with the cranberry bogs, but I don't think I ever saw them harvested. So I missed that.
And now, if you're in Walpole, Leo, you never will, apparently.
Sad.
The collapse of the Walpole cranberry.
What a shame.
What of the cranberry festival?
You already had your Thanksgiving, Mr. Ritchie, because the Canadians celebrate a month early.
Yep, back on your Columbus Day.
What do Canadians do on U.S. Thanksgiving? Anything?
Enjoy the respite. I mean, there's nothing happens in the world. So
you don't take a vacation, right? But Americans have stopped running. So you can relax. This is what it would be like if in a world without the United States.
No, not at all. We still enjoy your television.
The television continues.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here. Both Renee and Andy do other podcasts. Andy, of course, on the 5x5 network, 5x5.tv, where you can find Inako's Almanac, and he also does dramatic readings of old columns. Whatever. Yes. And Renee, of course, has Debug, which you'll find at imore.com/debug.
Leo, speaking of Debug, we did back-to-back episodes just to get them out of the way before the holidays, and we'll put them up week after week. But we did extensibility and watch kit with James Thompson of PCalc, Ashley Nelson of Dropbox, Brian Irace of Tumblr, and Brad Ellis of Pacific Helm. And then the week after that, we did watch kit with John Gruber of Daring Fireball and John Edwards, who's an iOS developer, but also a watchmaker who works on Rolexes and Omegas and high-end watches. So we could sort of see it from both angles.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, so those will be up this week and next week.
Very nice. Well, we thank you all for being here. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving or not. Thank you, Jason Howell, reminding me that the poor fella's going to be working long hours putting together the best of Mac Break Weekly. You can help him if you go to twit.tv/best of. Suggest a fabulous moment you'd like to see again in our best of episode, which will air Christmas week.
Notable moments, also good stories, because I've gone through a bunch of the submissions already, and I have a lot of good moments, but how about some really good stories to kind of
like there were big issues, big stories during the
or great discussions around a good big story from the year.
All right. twit.tv/best of. If you want to be part of our New Year's Eve festivities, tickets are in short supply, but you can email tickets at twit.tv at any time. If you want to see any show, it's always a good idea to do that. And we are looking for people who would like to be part. We can't guarantee you a role on the air, but if you'd like to be part of our celebration, we're going to try to get somebody in every time zone. twit.tv/NY. Our Teespring shirts are still for sale for a couple more days. We thought these would be great holiday gifts. Boy, were we wrong. No one wants them. But
we're at 283 now. Better than it was.
Way to sell them, Leo.
These things suck. No, I like them. There's a dress shirt with the Twit logo on it. Looks like you work at Twit. And there's a polo shirt if you want to be for casual Friday when you come to Twit.
Maybe like the next time you do a design, if you do something as classy as that, also have embroidered underneath it that stands for a network called This Week in Tech. I'm not proudly boasting of the fact that I'm very slow in the uptake in general.
Yeah. I think that's part of the problem. Week. Yeah. Teespring. How often do I advertise them? Every damn show. TEESpring.com/Twit. Teespring is great. They just raised a huge amount of money, I think. Venture funding started by a couple of college guys, and we've been really it's been fun partnering with them, so they do some nice stuff for us. In this case, maybe not so great. Teespring.com/Twit. You know what? You should own it now so that you can say, I bought it.
It'll be a collector's item.
It'll be a cult
very
classic.
Few of them. We don't make extras. If we don't,
it's gonna be the one that no one has because no one ordered it at the time. We're not supposed to say this, but we're short packing these shirts.
I don't know what that means.
Believe me. Oh, they know what it means.
They know what it means. Oh,
you're gonna be at Comic-Con next year. You're gonna see this with a CGA grade slabbing of like 9.8 mint, and you're gonna say, you know, I could have bought that when it was just
exactly.
Look at those graphs we talked about before. Okay, have we not learned the lessons of not buying something immediately as soon as it comes out and then holding on to it?
Or
do you not care about your investment future?
Mint in the box, collector grade. Shirts.
Actually, you know, you've seen sci-fi movies where everybody in the future is wearing the same thing, and it's all very futuristic. This is like 30 years from now, everybody's wearing this shirt.
Everybody's wearing that. Nobody will think you're a twit.
Right.
There you go.
Like in the movie Her.
You'll be able to flip it instantly.
People will make fun of you for not wearing one. Do you want to be that person?
You don't want to. And by the way, you should wear your pants right up here with those
shirts. You wear that shirt, you have shingy hair, you will be a cultural icon.
Mm-mm-mm. Ladies and gentlemen. We do Mac Break Weekly.
I've never met you, but I feel as though I need to. I'm your defender here.
He's Mr. Shingy. Well, you know what? Let's get Shingy on the show. And he can talk to you, Andy, and you'll speak his language. From the planet Shingy.
The five elements of Chinese cosmology.
Yeah. The show is done every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Well, it begins. It's never done, but it begins at Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. You could watch live if you wish, but if you don't wish to, or you can't because of that darn thing called work, don't worry about it. We got on-demand audio and video available for you after the fact. twit.tv/MBAW. You can also find it on YouTube, youtube.com/MacBreakWeekly, or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated for later distribution, a.k.a. iTunes. And the fine Twit apps on every platform. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work because break time. Maybe wear one of those nice Twit shirts when you do. Break time is over. Thank you, boys and girls.
I think my Skype survived.
Yeah, no. Great.
Downgrading
looks
works.
And sounds great. Yes.
How did you? That's bizarre.
I don't understand.
Did you do the port forwarding this time?
No.
Nope.
I think something happened. I don't know. Here's a video on how cranberries are grown. While we watch the video.
The Ocean Spray is a consortium.
A consortium of cranberry growers.
And distributors.
Here she is, Miss Ocean Spray 2012.
How many are native to this land? Cranberries are one of them.
There they are in the bog.
You can make them into syrups. You can bake them into pies.
It's like the best punch bowl ever.
Have you ever heard of this thing called a craisin? Fry them in oatmeal cookies.
Well, are they harvesting the cranberries from the bog right now? Is that what that is?
Well, absolutely. See, it's a dry growth field. And what they found out was that you could very easily, if you flood the bog, there's like usually levels of cranberry bogs. They start off with a highest elevation bog. They flood that. And then they have these beaten machines that, because the cranberries are lighter than the water, less dense, they float to the top. And then you can just simply get a boom and skim them off, you see.
Oh.
And then you take the water from the highest bog, use to flood the lowest bog.
You're saying that these berries actually grow on the ground. They don't grow in water. That's just a harvesting technique.
They're bushes, right.
The bog is for a harvest.
Exactly. Well, because, harvest you know, bog. I mean, we don't, they're small family-owned operations. They can't hire in like their pickers.
They don't have Mexicans in Massachusetts. That's the problem. Oh, now I'm
really
in
not
trouble.
Going there. You're on this journey. You're on this journey alone.
Here in California, we don't have this problem. We just make people bend over, stoop labor, instead of floating.
Actually, it's a shortage of hip waiters. There's like an import.
Oh, yeah. You guys have the lock
British
on hip waiters.
Imposed upon us.
Yeah.
We could not allow to have more hip waiters, as many hip waiters as we need. So the fishing industry gets most of them.
If we don't pass immigration reform, this is how all vegetables will be harvested in the future.
It's a fruit. It's a berry.
It's a fruit. It's a berry. Look, I never knew this. I always thought they grew in bogs. They take 16 months. Well, it's a very bad business. And plus, no one wants them. They're served once a year.
Actually, I did hear that like the cranberry industry is lobbying against like the like beverage taxes because they're saying that look, I mean, we're not just adding sugar to our cranberry juice because we're trying to make fat kids. It's because these are very very bitter fruit.
It's hot. And you don't want to drink a cranberry without some sugar in it.
Exactly.
But I do love Ocean Spray cranberry juice.
You need some sweetener.
Sweetener. Put a little sweetener in there. It's also good for bladder infections.
Well, I've never tried drinking it from that end, but I'll take your word for it, Leo.
We don't start a cranberry podcast right now.
If you were to serve onion juice for Thanksgiving, you would also need sugar. But we don't.
Turns out their first idea was clam cranberryato.
Remember that? Clamato?
Oh, that's huge here, Leo. That's how you make a bloody Caesar.
Oh, it's disgusting. They put clams in your tomato juice?
Yeah, French Stewart was the spokesperson from it because they could say, well, we're going to have to get the weirdest person on TV to advertise
that was
this.
A good idea. I want oysters in my cranberry juice.
It is huge. I don't understand it, but it's huge in Canada.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we got the.
I love cranberries.
We got Moxie. People drink Moxie.
Moxie. There's a soda.
We call it a rusted lug loosener.
Pretty much people only eat cranberries once a year, right?
Cranberry juice cocktails.
Christmas and Thanksgiving.
I usually have that.
Yeah. So the whole thing about floating them was just to make it easier to harvest them.
Exactly. Again, they have those things that basically beat the bushes to like separate them from the bush, and they float
wild.
To the top of the
juice. Why can't you should clever. Do that with Brussels sprouts and other vegetables.
Maybe they're not dissolve them.
You don't have the durability that a cranberry does.
I feel like I should hand in my Rhode Island citizenship card. Because I never knew that. I always thought they grew in bogs.
They're a bog fruit.
All right, guys. I will let you go after this.
Okay.
Thank you so
much. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a happy Thursday.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Thank you.
Take care, you guys.